It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
What's up, everybody? It is episode 4 of the Brady and the Bunch podcast. It is Tuesday, March 12th. Hard to believe we are in the middle of March. And our next guest, someone that we've talked to a bunch on the huddle before, someone we know have a pretty good relationship with overall with our station, and someone that you, the listener, also know. It's our buddy Lou DeMasi. Lou, how are you?
Good, Brady. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Let's see. We got about 45 minutes for this podcast, and 43 of them we spent reading your resume. Let's just remind people. Norwich University graduate. You won a national title with the cadet men's hockey team. Two-time All-American. You played 4 years of professional hockey. You're now the head coach of Burlington High School's boys hockey team. And, oh, by the way, you do a lot of work in the community, and we'll get to all that and what you're up to. So pretty laundry list of resume.
Yeah, it's been a fun walk so far. I think I've been real lucky with the things we've been able to do, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, I want to start kind of with what you're doing now, because right now, I guess, is the best way to describe what you do for work event planner? Is that kind of the best thing to lead into it?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. Yeah.
All right. So you're an event planner, and you put on a lot of events around the Champlain Valley, Oktoberfest down on the waterfront, which we partner with every year in September. But you also are one of the integral pieces of putting on the Labatt Blue Pond Hockey Classic, which we had just about a month ago, right?
Yeah, we Scott Crowder, who owns the Pond Hockey Classic out of New Hampshire, he and I got connected through a mutual buddy and became friends, and we started it. I think this year was like the 10th year. Ninth successful year, because we had a little trouble year one, but yeah, we started it, kept it rocking and rolling, and it's grown into something that's incredible. I mean, this year was 150 teams that sold out in one day, and I think it's something that out of 150 teams, I think it's less than 10% about our local, even, you know. So it's teams coming from basically all over the country, coming into a very quiet Colchester at the time, and it's something that's, it's an awesome venue. It's fun to put on, and it's also something that's definitely a boom for the local economy.
How much work does it take to get that ready? I mean, I just picture you or and other people out there on the ice just shaving it, making it perfect for like a week out. I mean, how much work goes on behind the scenes? Because it's an amazing event for the 2 days, that 3 days that we're all there, but I can only imagine what goes on the week or so leading up to it.
I think that's the funny thing about events and event management. You know, it's like people show up for the event and it's just like, oh, these things just take care of themselves, you know. But it's, you know, what they don't see is that as soon as we have about 10, 11 inches of ice, Gardner excavating, contracting, like anytime we get more than an inch and a half or two of snow, like the whole thing's being plowed, you know, the grade stakes are up, and it's a constant battle with Mother Nature, with, you know, plowing and clearing and warming and cold and making sure the ice is perfect. Because, I mean, if we let an inch of snow sit there for a day and then it warms and cools, it's like the whole thing's shot. So it's and then if the ice isn't good, you know, we have huge sewer pumps that we pump the water right out of the lake to make sure it's, you know, the boards go up in a day. But it's basically about 2 to 3 months of work before. And that's just on the ice, let alone, you know, all the back end stuff.
They do the Pond Hockey Classic in various cities. I think I know they've got one in Buffalo. They've got one in Saratoga, one in New Hampshire. There are others as well around the country. Have you ever played in one of them?
You know what? It's funny. I haven't. And every year I'm like, this year we'll do a family team or, you know, but the weekend's so crazy and it's, you know, it's, no, I haven't. But it's from a hockey guy and a perspective of somebody who was lucky enough to grow up when, you know, there were backyard rinks and everybody skated on the pond and it was still a big thing. You know, it's like looking from a kind of a director on the outside in, it's like, what could possibly be better? Like, you're out there with your buddies, kind of grassroots hockey out on the pond, and then you go sit in the beer garden and sit by the fire and just muck it up for the day, you know? So it's definitely something in the future I'll do for sure. But, you know, it's been a little crazy getting everything organized.
What is it like playing pond hockey, actually? I mean, and growing up, because that's a memory that I never had. Like, I can tell you countless stories about shooting baskets till 11 o'clock at night when you couldn't even see. I could tell you stories about playing, you know, having entire wiffle ball seasons in my backyard, but I never could skate. I never really had an interest in hockey growing up outside of D1, D2, and D3, the Mighty Ducks. What was it like growing up playing pond hockey?
You know, it's a special thing, and we were actually just having this conversation in the locker room. I coach BHS hockey, which we'll get into, but you know, it's like this nowadays, it's almost like there's so much structure in hockey and probably youth sports in general, where it's unlike basketball or tennis, or where you can just grab a rack and go play anywhere. There's pavement, or even soccer or stuff. You know, it's like there has to be a lot of man hours or even the perfect conditions out on a pond to be able to skate. And it's when you get out there, it's just, you know, you're open in the elements, and it's something that you're just having fun too. You know, it's your buddies out there. It's your, you know, your mom and dad. You get the car lights out on the ice, and you're just sweating and you're hurting, and the ice is crappy. And it's just something that, I mean, that's where you learn a lot of skills that you don't even realize you're learning, but it's just having so much fun. And I think that's one of the things that kind of is lost nowadays, is that it's, you know, you just show up to the rink, put your gear on, and it's a structured practice. So it's, and at the same time too, with pond hockey, you know, whether with the warming temperatures and stuff, like it's tough to get it going. And I think it's something that's definitely hurt the game from my eyes, because it's coming from a perspective of when I was younger, you know, out of Hunt Middle School here on North Ave, there was 40, 50 kids out there every Saturday playing, you know. So, you know, we were talking about, it's like those kids that come out in the pond and just go out for fun, you know, then they join youth hockey or whatever. Nowadays, it's like, you know, what parent in the right mind would want to pay a crazy amount of money, come to a cold rink just for the kid to try a sport they don't know if they like or not, you know? So it's kind of a whole kind of circle of life thing, but it's, as a kid growing up, those are your best memories with your family, and out there, you can't feel your toes or your fingers, but you're just having so much fun.
You mentioned kind of the family element of it. Well, your family is kind of the first family of hockey, as it's been relayed to me in this area. I mean, your dad, longtime coach at St. Mike's. You've got a brother who's on the coaching staff at Norwich, and they just won their conference tournament, are going back to the NCAA tournament. Your sister has done some coaching and played Division I. So, I mean, you are the first family of Burlington hockey. What does that mean to you when someone says that?
Yeah, it's special, and it's something that it's great to see that, you know, we've kind of evolved, and now my father, who coached St. Mike's for 25 years and a zillion hours at the rink with all of us in youth hockey, now all of us who all played college hockey, St. Mike's, Northeastern, Norwich, are now behind the bench somewhere. You know, like you said, both my brother and sister won their league titles at Norwich this year, or this past weekend, you know, packed house crowds. It was great. My sister and I coach the Burlington High School boys team. She coaches the Colchester-Burlington combined women's team at the high school, you know. So it's kind of something that we were obviously all into as younger kids, and now we're kind of giving back and still being a part of the game as coaches.
Lou, let me mention the coaching thing again, because you brought that up, and I've never quite understood the hockey dynamic here, because where I was growing up, it felt like half the people who played hockey would leave and play prep hockey, or they'd go and play in some junior league, and the other half would be left playing high school. And so I never felt like I got to see like my full high school team, what it should have been, because everybody ended up all around the country. I mean, is that a normal thing?
Yeah, and that's been going on for a long time. And I think there's a couple different ways to look at it. One, like, if you're good enough, they'll find you. But that being said, is that it's a tough position now, where there's no scouts coming to the, you know, Vermont high school hockey games, or you kind of have to go. You know, I have many buddies who I played with in college and beyond who are now prep school and college coaches. And, you know, it's these big junior prep school tournament showcases where all these coaches go and they can see, you know, 20, 30 teams on a weekend, where, you know, you get the exposure and probably the best talent to go. So it's it's something that we, you know, talk about, and kids that want to move on or want to have a chance to play in college, unfortunately, you know, that they kind of have to either take that next step, or, you know, in my scenario, I played 4 years at Burlington High School and then went off to Northwood for 1 year, and then was lucky enough to get picked up after that, you know. So it's, I think you see less kids that are doing all 4 years in high school and then moving on. You know, I think you see a lot of kids where if they get a shot, then it's, you know, their sophomore or junior going, and even repeating their junior and going to prep schools or juniors for 2 to 3 years. And it's, you know, and I think kids, I mean, when I was at Norwich, there wasn't, the year we won the title, there was nobody under 21, you know. So I think it's, kids are sticking around and they're going into college later. And I think at the highest levels, you know, they're picking them off at 18 plus. But it's, you know, for the most part, there's a big difference when you go in as a freshman, whether you're 18-year-olds or even 21-year-olds, you know, just for development and sheer strength. So it's, you know, it's a tough game. It's funny, but it's, you know, I think it's something that really hasn't changed and kind of still is the norm for hockey.
You know, when I was coaching youth league baseball, I spent a couple summers, three of them, I think, coaching 16 and under, and I was kind of taking kids through the college process, and I coached in college for a couple of years, too, and so I was dealing with kids that age as they were trying to come, you know, I was trying to recruit them to come to the school that I was coaching at. How much, though, do you see, you know, just kids and parents whiff on what their kid is? Because I can tell you countless casualty stories of a kid who left my town league program to go play at some elite travel team and ended up riding the bench and never got the experience that they wanted. So it's a fine line between trying to push yourself to be better and get exposure, but also recognizing the level that you should be playing at.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because it's, you know, if you do whiff like that, it's about a $50,000 or $60,000 whiff,
yeah.
You know, and it's not only that, it's you're taking, you know, you're leaving your high school and, you know, your friends that you grew up forever and trying to make a, you know, make a, but at the same time, you know, if you don't know, you don't go. So if it's, we always, you know, find a summer league or find a summer, you know, team or even a fall team that's at that level or close to that level. So then without having to leave high school or wherever you're going for prep school, then you can at least get a sniff of, you know, where's my game at? Am I good enough to play with these kids? And then from there, you know, that's kind of how you get looked at for where you could or possibly should go, you know? So then it's like, not just saying, I think I'm all right. Let's just take a leap here. And, you know, unless your parents are loaded, that's one thing. But at the same time too, it's leaving your home, leaving your, you know, your family and all your friends and not really having a shot. Cause I would love to see the percentage of kids that are in prep school, or even juniors that even get to play college. You know what I mean? That's a whole different, but it's a tough thing. Cause you always want to make sure you're in the best position, or especially as a father, you know, wanting to put them in the best position, but it's, you know, figuring out the reality of that situation before you go ahead first.
How expensive is hockey? Like if you're talking about 1 year of hockey, how expensive is it?
That's the crazy thing. And, you know, I have a good buddy that's, you know, a sales rep for CCM hockey. And he's like, every time we get together for golf or something, he's like, I'm going to be driving a Zamboni in the next 3 years. Cause I think the game isn't growing as much, at least around here as he would like. I think because of that reason, I think, you know, when you put kids aren't playing pond hockey or even street hockey, so they're not getting maybe as introduced as a fun game. And it's, you know, if you get to the higher levels, I mean, sticks are $250, you know, the top of line pair of skates is around $1,000, you know, and then you talk about every hour ice is over $200. I mean, it's probably like $400 in Canada, you know, so it's got to be, it's tough because it's expensive and it's time consuming. You're on the road all the time. You're staying in hotels and going away for the weekends. And I think it's something that hopefully it's sustainable, but you know, according to good friends, it's kind of dwindling a bit.
We talk about you playing at Norwich, winning a national championship, two-time All-American, your brother coaching at Norwich now. Division III sports gets this rep that it's just like lesser than everything else because it's Division III. But when it comes to hockey, Division III, I think there are some Division III teams that could be on par and beat some Division I teams. I mean, Division III hockey gets a bad rap.
Yeah, it's a funny because it's, you know, I think it's just the number behind it, the three rather than a one. And it's my father coaching at St. Mike's for 25 years, and I believe it was 1999. They won the last Division II NCAA title ever. And after that, Division II was disbanded, and there's still a whole St. Mike's and that Northeast 10 division that's kind of stuck in that Division II realm. But as an NCAA, there's only Division I and Division III, you know? So for example, when we were at Norwich, I think we had, you know, out of my 4 years, there was two guys that played in the NHL and probably well over 20 that played professionally in some kind of level. And we were more than 50% Canadian. Everybody was over 21, you know, and that at that time we, you know, we had many 16-0 runs, and we could have probably given a lot of teams a good run, and, you know, maybe not like the Hockey East teams, but, you know, and nowadays it's completely leveled out, even in D3, you know, where it was like the Norwich, Middlebury, and Plattsburgh back in the day. You know, all the teams are good, and everybody's, you know.
You forgot Oswego in there, Lou. You forgot Oswego.
Yeah, it's funny. My good buddy from prep school was in net. The year we won it in 2003, we played Oswego in the championships, and we beat them 2-1. But yeah, those SUNY schools in Plattsburgh and locally, it was always us Middlebury and Plattsburgh. But yeah, you get out there in Geneseo and they're incredible this year, Oswego, and there's so many good teams now. And I think it's always because of the three, and you know, you look at Hockey East or Division One, you know, it's tough to even, you know, look past that. But I think it's great hockey there.
You know, you mentioned hockey maybe not growing at the rate that you as a fan and you as someone who's in the sport would like to see it grow, but I have to feel like girls hockey has to be growing at a pretty impressive rate. I can just picture, you know, when your sister was growing up, not having that many opportunities to play. But then now fast forward, you know, 15, 20 years, it feels like the sport of women's hockey is really, really growing. And it feels like it will continue to grow with the U.S. women's team winning the gold medal last year at the Olympics. Am I wrong in that assumption?
Yeah, and I think it's fun to watch it, too. My sister got a scholarship and played at Northeastern, where Kendall Coyne, who's now world famous now for doing the lap in the
skills challenge, yeah.
There with the NHL. Yeah, I mean, when we went there, it was like, it's a different game with no hitting, but it's, you know, they take a lot more chances, and it's, you know, their stick skills and stuff it's really fun to watch, because there's something that, you know, as we're growing up and you get an icing down and you're about to get buried into the boards, you know, you're not going to take those chances on the guys level. But, you know, when they're going down and you know, it's a lot of fun to watch, and it's really progressed and watching, you know, that, especially that in the NHLs there, it's great to see. And it's watching, you know, the women's team, Colchester Burlington, when, you know, we usually play back to back there, you know, it's great. It's great hockey, and it's fun to watch. And it's great to see that that's really taken off.
Do you get to follow much UVM hockey these days?
I don't as much, just because things are crazy, and I don't really even, you know, I follow Norwich because, you know, my brother's on the bench, but I don't, you know, the day to day or knowing guys on the team or stuff like that, like, I couldn't really tell you. But, you know, going to a few games, it is incredible hockey and fun to watch.
Well, Lou, we're excited, certainly, that the new arena is going to come in. But do you want to see them? I mean, how much of the old gut do they have to keep? They're obviously very quick to say it's not a new arena. It's just they use the word transformational renovation. Like, what's it like seeing a game at the gut?
Yeah, I think it's great. And I was excited to hear that they're going to renovate it but not completely dismantle it, because there's so much character in that rink. And not only from a UVM standpoint, but as in high school, you know, we won a state tournament there. And it's like, going to the gut is the greatest thing ever when you're in high school, you know? And I think when you go to a UVM game with the band and the student section and the bleachers, and you're right over watching, you know, the best hockey in the country, it's such a special place and a fun place to go watch. And it's great to see that they're going to make some improvements that probably need to be done, but keeping kind of the character of the building.
Talking with Lou DeMasi, our buddy here, who works on a lot of events with us throughout the year, but also is a big-time listener of The Huddle here on the Brady and the Bunch podcast. Remember, as always, the Brady and the Bunch podcast is hosted on 1013thegame.com. We are now on iTunes and Spotify as well, so you can go out and subscribe to the Brady and the Bunch podcast, and you'll get notifications to your phone whenever new episodes are there. You can also follow us on Facebook at 101.3 The Game and on Twitter at 101.3 The Game. So wherever you're getting your podcasts, you got a chance to get us. Again, the Brady and the Bunch podcast. And if you want to be on it, you can message me, Brady at 1013thegame.com. Lou, we like to do this with everybody. We like to give the audience and the kind of the guest slash co-host of the podcast a chance to ask me some questions, things they want to know, whether it's about me, about the show, Rich Arnie, anything. So fire away. What do you got?
Sure. What are your goals for the future? Where do you see yourself in 5 years as a sports broadcaster and talk show host?
Let's see. I feel like I'm in a job interview with you right now. I feel like that's the standard job interview question. You know,
let's take it back. Where do you see sports talk radio going in the future?
I think sports talk radio is evolving, and I think really it's kind of what we're doing right now. It's just about putting out audio all the time everywhere. I think really, you know, people can say, "Oh, you know, radio, you know, I've heard people say radio is dying." That's not really the case. We got stats to prove that I won't bore you with. But really, it used to be that you could just show up and do the radio show. And now, you know, we have a responsibility to just be giving you guys content, giving the listeners content all the time. So that's why I think you've seen a really big emphasis from us on building up our website and building up our social media channels and doing things like this now to get, you know, get our audience, get our listeners more involved. Because at the end of the day, the radio show is really what you guys want. We just drive the ship. So we come in every day and try to talk about what you guys are talking about at the water cooler. And, you know, if we're doing that right, you know, so basically it's your show and we're just kind of navigating it along for you. And that's the goal. And then our goal is to put out more and more content so that, you know, in a perfect world, we would be your one-stop shop for everything. Now, is that entirely likely given that there's ESPN and Fox, et cetera? Probably not. But that's the ultimate goal, that we want to be the first place that you go to every day to get everything and not just wait until 3 o'clock.
It's funny you said ESPN and Fox. Do you consider Barstool Sports as one of your, not competitors, but as an equal kind of in the sports media?
I would, and I did this on a, I think this was on a podcast last week where we talked about Barstool. I don't love a lot of what Barstool does. I'm not a huge fan of Portnoy, the Prez. Like, I'm not a big fan of him. I think he's got too much of a shtick for me. I'm also not really into the sophomoric humor. Like, once you get beyond, like, 22, like, I'm just not into that stuff. But I have a huge respect level for what they've done in terms of building up from nothing. I mean, Portnoy started out as with a flyer that he would just hand around for free in the streets of Boston, and now he's grown it into a $1 billion company. So I have, from a business perspective, I have amazing respect for Barstool. They certainly have a good way of finding out what's trending and getting, you know, we've put stuff up from Barstool too. So it's not like, even though I don't love it, it's not like we don't use it when it's there. And I think the guys that do the Pardon My Take podcast are hysterical. For as much as I kind of want to lump everybody at Barstool into one box, I think those guys are on their own island. I think those guys are great. I ran into PFT commenter at the airport one year and totally bombed my introduction with him. But that's a story that I'll remember for a while. And someone asked me, who's the guest you've never gotten on that you'd like to? I'd love to get Big Cat from Barstool on. And I've tried to get Hank from Barstool on, and it hasn't worked yet. So I think, you know, there's a part of Barstool that I really love and really admire. And there's other parts of Barstool that, you know, I wouldn't run my own business that way.
Yeah, I'd say I started with them when they just got going, and I love their Brick by Brick, you know, and now they have a hockey podcast, which is great. I think it's fun. With sports talk, do you think we could start a petition, or is there any way to get rid of mock drafting in sports talk radio?
You know,
anything to do with the draft?
I love the draft, but I love the draft like draft week. I don't love, you know, and Rich hates mock drafts, and Rich hates all draft talk. You know, I have a hard time. Look, I don't watch a ton of college football because college football is not that big up here. And I really only watch college football with the express purpose of getting, you know, how are guys going to translate to the NFL. So even if you told me in November we're going to start talking mock drafts, I wouldn't even know who a lot of the players are. I'm not even starting to learn all of the big college prospects until we get to the combine a couple of weeks ago. I don't enjoy forecasting certain players to certain teams. I really just like talking about what teams need what position. And I'll trust the player development people and the scouting staffs of NFL teams to get those players right. But like, it's pretty obvious to me the Patriots need wide receivers. So I'd rather talk about why they need receivers than give you 15 names of people that might be available to them in the fourth round. That doesn't appeal to me. It's pretty evident that
it's funny that people will keep listening to, like, who's the guy on ESPN with the
Kuiper?
Like, they come up with these boards and, like, he's going to go 1, 2, 3. And, like, they sit there on draft day and they're just so far off. They have no clue what, you know, it's just like, what did we listen to for the last, you know, 6, 8 weeks for you guys to be completely wrong? And so it's funny. But I guess you're right. We don't have any college, you know, football really up here for a draft status or anything like that. But it's, you know, if I was to take one thing out of sports talk radio, it would be that.
I would take out my least favorite thing in sports talk radio is I really hate once a team wins the World Series or wins the Super Bowl, 5 seconds after, who's going to win it next year? That's what I really hate. What I hate more than anything.
Yeah, that's stuff like that is. I think my next question for you is, as a guy who played baseball, grew up with baseball, and talks about his career and stuff a lot on the radio, do you think last year when we held the Whipple Classic as a charity event and you played on the team Oktoberfest, do you think you lived up to the hype?
So I would say yes. However, you're going to rip me because I struck out maybe twice. I'll let you know this. When I play wiffle ball, I only hit left-handed. I don't hit right-handed. I am not I am not left-handed. I just hit left-handed and wiffle ball because it's generally easier to get to first base. So I turned around to swing right-handed because we needed a homer, but I haven't swung right-handed in years in wiffle ball. So I was doing something out of the norm there just because I was trying to get a little power. It's also, maybe this year at the Wiffle Classic, we could play with a bat that's bigger than the giant yellow bat, because the long, slender yellow bat is impossible to hit with.
Well, I think as we're talking about the tradition in hockey by the roots and playing pond hockey, it's not wiffle ball without the little yellow bat. And I will say that, you know, Team Oktoberfest did take down the title year one, but year two, I don't know if the difference was Brady on the squad, but, you know, second place definitely hurt. So we're going to be holding tryouts soon, so we'll see what happens with this year's squad.
Well, you know, I haven't hit, by the way, consistently since I was like 15. So it's been like 15 years since I've been a consistent hitter. So just because I hit in youth leagues growing up doesn't make me your number one pick as a hitter. If I wanted to go out there and truly, truly pitch and try to just really fling it around, we'd be talking about like Cy Young caliber numbers at the Wiffle Classic. But it's a charity event. I don't want to just go and throw my arm out and, you know, try to make everybody feel bad about themselves.
Hey, charity or no charity, we're there to win.
Yeah, I'm there to win too, but I'm also looking to throw strikes and looking to have some plays made behind me. A couple errors in there don't help.
Maybe you need to up your drinking game, then that'll work.
I'm going to pretend that you just didn't say that to me. I'm going to pretend that didn't actually just get said. So there's my three questions from Lou, and we give you guys a chance every time you're on as a guest co-host or a chance to ask. People like to ask too. The one I always get is, who's your favorite guest you ever had? And I think that it always depends, Lou, on kind of what we're talking about, because there are big names that I've spoken to that I've been disappointed by. There have been small names that I've spoken to that have been great. And then there's people that I just think are hilarious. The guy who I think is my favorite guest ever is Rick DiPietro, the old Islanders goalie, since we're talking a lot about hockey.
Yeah, I think, and for your show, like, I love listening to the insight from like TC every week. And, but my favorite guests that you have on the show are the guys that have been there and that kind of open up and tell you like the behind the scenes stories on what really happened or how this went down, or, you know, from their experience that you don't see on the news or you don't know about. It's kind of like that 24/7 NHL thing where it's like you're behind the scenes and like you just, I love hearing those stories, and you do a great job with any interviews, questioning and getting the dialogue going. And that's probably my favorite, when it's just a random guest like DiPietro, where they're telling stories about random stuff, and it's just fun to hear.
My favorite story ever told to me on the air, and I've heard it twice, because when I used to work in Albany, he told it, and then when I worked here, he told it. But DiPietro told us a story about how he ended up at Boston University.
And yeah, that was great.
Yes, this was my favorite story ever. So for those who didn't hear it, DiPietro said, and DiPietro, you would know better than I do, but was an extremely highly ranked, you know, player coming out of his prep school and all that, and every place wanted him. And he goes to Boston College on his recruiting visit, and it's like a Tuesday night, and he's looking to get after it. You know, him and the guys that are on the recruiting trip, they're looking to get after it and have a good time and throw some back and things like that. And because it's a Tuesday night, like, the guys at Boston College don't want to do that, really. And so he was like a little disappointed. So he finally, the recruits drag out the team. They go out. They make some bad decisions. He ends up in the hospital, and he wakes up at 4 in the morning with the coach at Boston College and his mom next to him. And his mom goes, if this is what happens here, then you're not coming here. So his mom told him he couldn't go to Boston College, so he ended up at Boston University.
Which is so sad, too, because that is any recruiting trip any hockey guy has ever been on. So it just happened to be that night he ended up in the hospital. It would have been the same story whether he was at BU or UVM, you know?
So that was my favorite story. Just like, and DiPietro is a radio host in New York, and so I've heard him, you know, he's got multiple stories like that. Like, the thing, you hockey players are crazy, by the way.
And the thing about DiPietro, too, is when I was playing in a junior or a summer league tournament down in Marlboro, Mass., and I think at the time he was either at BU or he was just drafted and moving on. But I remember him. People had always talked about how he can control the puck with the stick, but He came out, the puck was coming in like bottom of the circle. He went and got the puck, co-dragged around the first guy forechecking, and like threw a sauce over the red line to the guy at the far blue line. And we were just like, this guy is unbelievable. You know, he had control of his stick just like he was a regular player, you know, with a blocker and a glove on one hand. It was crazy.
And the thing also that's crazy about DiPietro is that he's really done a good job. I mean, he's barely like 35 years old now. I mean, he's become a punchline about, you know, one of the worst contracts in history, and he signed whatever it was, you know, somewhere between 10 and 14 years, this deal with the Islanders. He ends up getting hurt and ends up out of the league, so he's become this giant punchline, and it took him a while to like get over being that. I don't know that I'd call him a bust, because when he was playing, he actually had a very good career, but just not living up to the contract. So it took him a while to get over that, but Now when he speaks, he speaks very elegantly about being, you know, being okay with those labels, which I actually think is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, I think you can get over that label pretty quick when you look at your bank account every day, you know.
You know, we talk about hockey players being crazy, and you just used a phrase like he throws a sauce or something. You guys have your own language, and when I'm at Pond Hockey, I end up talking like hockey talk. Like, I walked up to everyone and like, hey, you'd like a beer? I'm like, sure, thanks, Butte. I'm like, what is this language that is you guys have that is contagious to everybody?
Yeah, I'm sure it's the same with most sports where you have different lingos and stuff. And I think for the most part, all hockey players are kind of the same breed, you know, and I think they all talk the same and they all act the same. And, you know, it's a real family culture, and locker rooms almost just as fun, if not better than, you know, being out on the ice playing. So I think it's easy to catch the lingo, and you know, and now with this Spit and Chicklets podcast, it's like now everybody's hearing all these things that used to just be in the locker room. So it's fun. That's what it should be.
Yeah, I wish I could skate. Like, being out at Pond Hockey makes me wish that I could skate. I actually learned how to ice skate in like seventh grade because I thought that it was going to be something that, as I got into dating, was going to be something I could do with a girl. I went ice skating about four times after that, and I never with a girl.
Yeah, the funny thing about pond hockey, though, is whether you played in the NHL or you even just stopped in youth hockey, is that after the first game, the ice is so beat up, it's like the ultimate equalizer, right? So whether you can barely skate or whether you're a superstar, you know, the ruts in the ice and the snow and the, you know, just the atmosphere, it's like you can't dangle around or you can't, you know, there's so many things that you can't do. It's just, you know, you just have to go out and have fun. That's it. So it's a perfect tournament for any kind of level.
You know, we talk about, kind of circling back, you're coaching high school hockey now. We talk about hockey. You know, hockey doesn't get treated like football does. When we talk about football being a dangerous sport, there's all these things that have been done to make football safer because parents are afraid of their kids playing it. What sentiment do you have in hockey? Because, you know, I associate hockey with being a very dangerous sport, but we don't have the same kind of movement towards to make it safer, I don't think, do we?
Yeah, and I don't know whether it's because just hockey's not as popular, and it's, you know, when you talk about the big baseball, basketball, and football, you know, it really doesn't get mentioned as much. But I mean, from my own experience alone, I stopped playing when I was over in Europe, and I got knocked out cold. You know, I was in a room with the blinds closed for about 2-3 weeks. I still have a sensitivity to light. So yes, it's definitely dangerous, but I guess that could probably happen in any sport. And I think the game has definitely evolved in, you know, now there's tons of rules in high school that there hadn't been before for, you know, boarding, hitting, you know, any kind of contact to the face, anything like that, you know, that definitely protects the players a lot more. Obviously, it's definitely still anytime you're going as fast as you can, standing on ice on, you know, a quarter inch thick blade with pucks going 50, 70 miles an hour, you know, it's going to be dangerous, but, you know, it's just kind of the name of the game, I guess.
I want to ask you about the hockey helmet, because if you look around the NHL, most players seem to just wear the helmet where there's just the shell. There's no face mask. There's no full guard or whatever. If I was playing hockey, I would wear, I think it's not mandated in college, but most college hockey players wear like the full clear visor that goes all the way down and covers the entire face. Why do NHL players not buy into that?
Yeah, in college you have to wear a face mask, and whether it's a cage or whether it's a bubble. You know, after college, it was the 2003, the year of the lockout. I went down to Georgia, which was kind of in AA terms, the East Coast League. I played there for a bit where you were required to wear a visor. And then I went down to even a league because it was, you know, I was a D3 guy undrafted, and it was all American League guys. Because of the lockout, everybody was down. And in the lower league, there were no requirements, you know, so I wasn't wearing a face mask. And it was, you know, because it's so much easier to see. Obviously, the risks are pretty good. But I will say, when I was wearing a visor in, like, the East Coast League, I would get black eyes from sticks. Like, basically all my front teeth are fake because they got shattered. And when I wasn't wearing a visor down in the lower league, you know, I didn't get anything, which was kind of funny. Maybe I just got lucky, but it's, you know, sometimes it gives you a kind of a false, you know, safety when you got that visor on that you can do more stuff and be a little more crazy with your stick. And, you know, so it's, I don't know where it will go. I wouldn't be surprised if the NHL does, like, everybody has to wear visors as it's kind of implemented, just like back in the day when they didn't wear helmets, you know? So it's definitely easier to see without one, but obviously you want to protect your eyes.
We talk a lot in baseball and my sport about unwritten rules, and everybody hates the unwritten rules. What are the unwritten rules of hockey?
That's the one thing where I hope, you know, there's a lot of debate, like, get rid of fighting in hockey, and that it's like hockey, fighting has to stay in hockey because it polices itself that way. You know, that's how superstars are protected. That's how basically everybody's protected. Cause you know, if you do something stupid, you're going to get beat up by, you know, teams have less of an enforcer. You know, when I was playing after college, we would have just one guy who would basically sit on the bench. Something happened or we were losing or, you know, we needed a rally. They just tap him and he'd go get in a fight. You know, nowadays there's a lot less of that where they have to be actually skilled players rather than just a set of fists. But, you know, hockey should always have fighting because it keeps itself under control. And people know, you know, if they're going to do something stupid, if they're going to do a dirty hit or whatever, like they better expect, regardless of whether you're a superstar or not, you know, to get into a fight and then get beat up and, you know, have kind of consequences for your actions. So the unwritten rules are not really unwritten, but it's, I mean, in the sense of rules, but, you know, I love that part of the game where it's like, you know, there's repercussions for your actions.
See, that's interesting though. And I'm not trying to be soft. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate, but you don't get to fight in high school. You don't get to fight in college. I do think there's fighting at the junior, you know, at junior levels, but guys turn it on and off based on where they're playing. Why do we need it at the pro level when you never had it growing up? Like the unwritten rules, I use them in baseball. I threw at guys when I was 14. Like I get it because I've always done that, but you don't always fight in hockey. Why do you just have to have it once you get to the pros?
I think one, because of what I just stated, and then two, I mean, regardless of whether there's people yelling and arguing whether hockey or fighting should be gone, like people love to watch it too. You know, like when somebody does a nice penalty kill, everybody doesn't stand on their feet and cheer and go nuts, right? It's like a fight is just, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's 100% real, you know? And I think the best part about it in hockey is that like you're going toe to toe with a guy for however long you can. And then the second it's done, you tap him on the ass, say, hey, nice fight, you know, good job, buddy. You know, or you going to have a beer after. It's a, it's a funny little game there where it's, you know, fighters fight and it's something that, I mean, I guess whether it's because of rules or whatever in juniors or high school, but I think it's a great part of the game and something that should never go.
Lou, as we mentioned, we do a lot of stuff together throughout the year. Oktoberfest will be down on the waterfront again. We've partnered up in the past on the wiffle ball tournament that you so graciously made fun of me for. What else you got coming up here next? I'm sure you got more things in the work.
Yeah, things are expanding pretty crazy. Last year, we started Oktoberfest Portland, right in Portland, Maine, on the water, which basically sold out. So we have two of those going. I just inked the deal for Oktoberfest Buffalo in 2020. And what we're basically trying to do is create, you know, a beer carnival rather than just a beer festival. So you show up, you know, there's tons of live music and fun. There's 40 plus brewers there where you're getting the best of that. And also like a full Bavarian themed carnival with all sorts of crazy games and fun. And that just keeps expanding and fun, you know. And then we do a lot of local stuff at like St. Meadows College, like Trucks, Taps and Tunes with food trucks and live music over in Essex and starting another one in Perkins Pier and, you know, working on a whole bunch of stuff on the go. So it's a pretty crazy summer.
When are you going to come together and put on the high school hockey winter classic or the local hockey winter classic? You've told me this is an idea of yours. When are we going to make it happen?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, we actually had some pretty serious meetings on, you know, we had a quote in like a verbal agreement for the group that does the Frozen Fenway to come in. We do it. We had a cool venue set up and we were going to work on doing like rivalry nights with the high school every weekday night, you know, your high school matchups, male, female, college teams, you know, Middlebury, Norwich, you know, great UVM and working on that. And it's something that we kind of got a good plan for it, but it's nothing that's on the books yet in the future. So it's those rinks are pretty crazy. I mean, you can play up to like 60 degrees on those rinks, you know, so that besides the Nor'easter, you can play any time. So it's something I would love to pursue even in the near future, but we'll see with young ones, youth hockey, high school, and a crazy business. We'll see what happens.
Well, I'm hoping that happens. I think that would be cool for the area and cool for the local scene and cool for all the teams around the area too and all the fans. So I think it would be great. But Lou DeMasi, episode 4, Brady and the Bunch podcast in the books. 2-time All-American at Norwich, also won a national championship for the Cadets. The first family of hockey in the Champlain Valley and someone who's a good friend of the station and a loyal listener of the Huddle. Lou, I know we'll be seeing you again soon. I appreciate you joining me.
Brady, I appreciate it. Love the stuff you guys got going on over there.